Welcome, everyone, to the Fangamer Podcast, episode 13, where we're going to talk about classes and jobs and video games and lots of other fun stuff. But before we get into that, let's introduce our lovely co-hosts this week. To my virtual left, we have, as always, Liz. How are you doing, Liz?
I honestly did not realize the record had started, so I had a lot of cookie in my mouth for a minute there.
But professional podcasting, folks. Mm-hmm. And to my right, Brian the Broski Jaworski. How you doing, Brian?
Doing all right. How are you guys?
I think, aside from the cookies and the drinks, we're going to
The cookies are delicious.
Really good. Are they Girl Scout cookies at that time of
year? Are they Thin Mints?
No, they are homemade cookies made from Alton Brown's chewy chocolate chip cookie recipe, which is very good, but I had to buy special bread flour to make, so.
That Alton Brown does good stuff, doesn't he? I hear good things about him.
It is the best cookie recipe I've ever made. Put that in the show notes, Garrett, because it is a seriously good
cookie.
You
send me the link to it. I'll put it in there. Maybe I should make you do show notes more often.
Consider it done. I can give you the recipe right now on air.
Baking with Liz.
You're like, man, every time we say we got to do that in the show notes, we actually have to follow through and put it in there, and it's a lot of work. But anyway, let's talk about what we're going to be doing today. We're going to go over, you know, we're going to introduce Brian here in a little more depth, but we're going to talk about what games they've been playing. Brian is finally here to talk about the Fangamer booth for PAX, which is very quickly approaching. And then we'll be talking about, again, classes and video games. And before we go through any further, though, let's go get into the nitty-gritty here of our auditioning third chair this week. Brian.
Brian, where should we start, Brian? You have an illustrious career with Starman.net and Fangamer. You've been around for a long time.
Yeah, I think, since the days of You Are Now Earthbound. Wow. Reed's First Sight.
Is this like 3 weeks in a row we've had people from You Are Now Earthbound?
Way back, yeah.
Unreal.
It is, because that's many, many years ago, and it just really makes me feel old.
It's over 10 years ago, I think.
Easily, because I came here over 10 years ago, so I think it's like 12.
Wow.
So did you start with the forum name Shadow X back then, or did you change at some point?
Yeah, I did have Shadow X back then, and the exact reason why I picked Shadow X, I've kind of forgotten, because I thought of so many reasons of why I picked it. The name originated, as far back as I can remember, some sort of weird mix between Shadow from Final Fantasy VI and X from Mega Man X. And I thought they sounded cool, so.
That's most how everybody picked their username when they were a kid.
As most people do.
Their forum name. So I'll ask my favorite question. Do you regret that name at all?
I actually did try to change it at one point. For a very brief time, it was Neo Shadow X. I don't know why.
Oh, that's real great.
I don't know why.
They were not a bad choice.
Exactly. I regretted it like that afternoon. And I even did like this whole, hey guys, my new name is this. And everyone's like, okay. And I, for once, you know, I guess because I've been around for a while on this
site.
People
actually respected that.
People are like, okay, cool. And I'm like, wait, no. Hey, just make this topic go away. This never happened. and then it actually recently changed again when I got an Xbox, because Shadow X was taken.
Oh, bastards.
So I had to be like, all right, well, what do I want, you know, it to continue? Like, do I want Shadow X, like, you know, a number, like my birth date or whatever? So I actually made the X be a word, and I picked Zion, X-I-O-N, and that was a Matrix reference.
Right.
Oh, so I'm like, that's so even I'm like, cooler, man.
Hey, so Neo.
Dark Shadow Zion is next.
Neo,
right?
Zion.
Liz, when's your birthday, out of curiosity?
Do you want the year? I mean, I'll tell you.
I just need the you know, month.
May 12th.
Okay, I think May 12th we should have Ryan go into the forums and have it be Neo Day, where he appends to everyone's name Neo. Neo Atticus, Neo Shadow X, and you'll just be Neo Neopaula.
That's a good name. I think my avatar is just the word Neo in a sandwich. I think I...
It is.
I got rid of the Paula a long time ago.
Now everyone just thinks that you're a hardcore, Matrix fan, that you really like Keanu Reeves.
Well, I got news for you, Garrett. I am a hardcore Matrix fan, and I love Keanu Reeves. His acting is as beautiful as he is.
I really liked him in Much Ado About Nothing. He was really good.
I saw him in Much Ado About Nothing. I had to watch the first Shakespeare class.
It's like Bill and Ted doing Shakespeare.
Whoa. Wherefore art thou? Whoa.
Anyway,
I like how none of us can remember a quote from Much Ado.
Yeah, it's so much for being an English major.
Right.
But this is the part where we talk more about Brian. So let's say, Brian, what I think we talked about this on one of the Lost episodes, but we'll pretend we didn't because those are Lost. How are you involved with Fangamer? What do you do for us?
Let's see. How do I answer that correctly? I actually don't really have an official title. I'm pretty much just quote-unquote
You know that
staff.
We just make up all of our titles, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know all if right. anyone clued you in on that.
I'm executive CEO of pool parties.
In the party
That's
planning
a
committee?
Good title.
I think Ryan Rofish is now in charge of the party planning committee.
He kind of volunteered himself the other day.
I mean, if you're in a fraternity and if you wear the shirt regularly, then you're going to have to man up.
You know, Brian, I think there might be an opening as executive CEO of the Tardy to the Party committee, which you can be a member of.
I might be tardy to that.
I know I'd not be able to make it, folks. So, Brian, where you live these days? You're New Jersey?
I live in central New Jersey, and yes, central New Jersey does exist. there's that weird debate, which I never understood why there is. I live near Sandy Hook, which if you look at a map, if you're looking at New Jersey, which is, if you don't know where New Jersey is, it's right underneath New York. There's like a little hook on the end of the state, and I live right next to that. More on the land side, not the ocean side.
Don't get too specific, because then people will start stalking you.
Yeah,
I mean, on this podcast.
I accidentally said my train stop next week, and I had Garrett edit that out, I think.
Yes, it was removed.
I'm in a pretty big town.
He has a gun.
No, I have a gun arm. No, I used to live in Red Bank. People who know Kevin Smith know that they used to be his stomping grounds. And he's got his store there, so that was a cool place to actually grow up in. But I now live elsewhere, nearby.
Tell people what you do, because I recently grew a great appreciation for your job outside of Fangamer.
Yeah, he is the Full Metal Alchemist, so it's a big deal.
I can't transmute sets. No,
and
I work
enough milk.
I work for a performing arts center at a college. And the short end of it is I'm a stage technician. And the long explanation is I'm the lighting and sound supervisor for the building. So whenever there's an event, whether it's student-related or outside venue, I make sure their lighting and sound needs are met, whether that's designing their lights, hanging their lights, same thing with sound setup, designing their sound. And when that's not going on, I work in the shop with my coworker. Building whatever we need to build. So it's a pretty busy job. It's almost like three jobs at once, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, going to a play recently, I saw Glenn Ross, and seeing the set, I mean, the last play experience I had before that was high school plays, which is really budget, you know, here's a big block of wood that we're going to make into the stage and everything. Not very impressive. And then seeing the real, like, you know, high-end stuff, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And he does, and they have to rebuild these things every couple months. It was, I was very impressed. It's a really cool experience. So everyone go out there and be patrons of your local theater, because it's good for you.
Actually,
you'll enjoy
I agree with you. I would totally recommend, if no one's ever done it, just to volunteer. I'm sure there's community theaters in your area. Trust me, they would love the help. Just let them know, you know, what your skill level is with tools.
It's, you know what, you know how I'll be patroning the theater, gentlemen? I will be going to the Chicago Theater in May to see Conan O'Brien. That's how I patron the theater.
Does that count?
You and everyone I know has tickets to him. I could not get tickets.
Mm. So what is he doing? Is he actually doing, like, is it just him doing stand-up or what?
I don't care if he's using a toilet for 2 hours. But I think he's just kind of bringing the Tonight Show on the road.
Yeah, I think
that'd
that's
be
what it
cool.
is.
I saw This American Life on the road. That was actually an amazing experience as well. So,
I wonder if he's bringing La Bamba with him. These are the questions I ask myself late at night.
They keep you up. Yeah, good times. Well, all right, let's see. I think we've gone through all the normal questions for you, Brian. I think we'll leave it to you now. What would you like to ask us so that our audience feels more in touch with who we are and what we do?
All right, let's see. I've listened to some of the past podcasts, so some of the questions I wanted to ask have already been asked. So, Garrett, this one's for you.
Oh, wow, I'm first. Good thing I didn't start drinking. Okay.
And it's not drinking related.
That's fine.
What is your biggest shame game that you played you enjoyed but don't want to admit?
Oh, this is easy because it was my song that I chose that no one really, except for one guy, actually guessed successfully. It's Dynasty Warriors, which is a terrible franchise.
Oh, I love that series.
Me too. I love Dynasty Warriors. I love going through.
So you guys are big babies together. That's not a very excited question.
I love the Dynasty Warriors games. I've never played the Gundam ones, which I can't imagine would not be.
No, stay away. Stay
really?
Away. No,
how they could
don't
that
exist.
Be bad though? Because I mean, they're really already pretty bad.
Well,
they're
all
giant robots. Come on.
If no one knows, Dynasty Warriors is the series is the same game literally over and over again. Like, there's so many minimal differences between like Dynasty Warriors 1, 2, 3, and so on. It's like, you know, they'll upgrade, like, okay, now you have a squad that follows you, or now it's raining, you know.
Yeah,
it's like ridiculous like that. But the music I find awesome, mm-hmm. and the I don't know. It's just the controls for it are very fluid. It's just easy beat 'em up.
It's kind of a button mash. I don't know if I'd say fluid, but there are certain little combos you end up using a lot, and there's certain characters who are super overpowered, like Lu Bu.
Oh, definitely.
And you just run through there and kill everyone. But I just have a lot of memories of college, me and my roommate not doing a lot of homework and playing a lot of Dynasty Warriors on like a 14-inch little tiny like color TV in our room, and it was good times. But it's just, it's a terrible game, but I would pick that up now and still be able to play for hours. It's one of those few games that I really feel bad about actually enjoying. So that's my shame game.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Well, it could have been worse, I suppose. It could have been Hello Kitty MMO. But anyway,
it could have been my, hey, at least it's not my shame game.
Oh, what I think I know what yours is, but
I think you do too. I think Liz knows as well, and
anyone who's a Facebook friend with you?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That is a shame. It's not as bad as Sling and his grandma game, though. If I hear one more time about how his apple pie is missing love,
wait,
I am
what? What is this grandma game? What?
He plays some game where it's like, Aaron has just finished baking, or is ready to finish baking grandma's apple pie, but it's only missing one ingredient, love. Will you help him find it?
And you just flip him off?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right.
Well, what else can you do, man?
Well, basically. Okay, Brian, what's your question for Liz?
So, Liz, for you, I actually think I already know the answer to this one, but I'm going to ask anyway. For a listening audience, what game frustrated you the most, and what moment was that in the game?
Link to the Past this week was very frustrating because there's a certain backseat gamer I live with who is like, oh, did you go to the fairy fountain? You should go bomb the fairy fountain because the fairy will give you a special reward. And it's like, I would have found it myself, maybe, but no.
But probably not, though. I mean, even I don't think I would have found that if I hadn't cheated off the back of like a Kellogg's cereal box.
Yeah, I know. I'm grateful for his help, but
So that was frustrating because of the audience or because of the game?
Because
like,
of the audience. Because
like,
you want something because of the game, I know.
Yes.
What about WoW, getting like ganked in WoW?
You know what?
That was always frustrating as hell.
That is a very good example. That is my most frustrating moment in gaming, where I think I actually took it out of my dad. But really?
Did you beat your dad with a Switch?
This was the first time I played an Alliance character. I'd always played Horde, but I chose to play an Alliance Warlock, and at level 20 there's some quest where it's like you need to go into a Horde area, which the barracks.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. That's
run up the entire like vertical distance of the Barrens to Ashenvale,
which is
ridiculous.
Like a 45 minute run.
Yeah, it's the biggest zone in the game, I think. And at that point there was no better way of getting around. Like, I had no mount or anything because I was just level 20. I must have gotten ganked so many times. I wanted to cry. I just wanted to get my stupid succubus. And can I tell you, I finally, after maybe 3 hours, got the succubus. I have never played that warlock since.
Oh, that's really sad.
It is really sad.
Take that, Blizzard. Take that stupid-ass gameplay.
Yeah. Screw you, people.
And actually, we'll need to talk about WoW more, and you can talk about how much you don't like warlocks later when we get to our show topic.
I don't dislike warlocks. I just thought that was
you should hate them. Look what they did to you. Think about that anguish and the crying and the time.
Well, they get theirs. All they do is Shadow Bolt, I think.
I don't know.
I don't know. I play a real class, like a tank. I'm useful.
Okay, we're getting too much into it. We're giving it away for free here, folks. Come on. Okay, that was our question.
That's
good
what
question,
I always
Brian.
Do, Garrett.
Thank you.
Let's take a break here and play some fun music as we segue to our next topic. All right, so let's get into what we've been playing this week. I will go first because I haven't played anything. Actually, no, I played Beatles Rock Band, and I don't know why I'm going to talk about where I played that or if I'm going to talk about it at all, but I'm going to segue to you guys because I think you've been playing something awesome. And let's let Brian kind of, what have you guys been playing this week?
I've been playing Final Fantasy 13.
Yay!
And what are you playing, for Xbox or PlayStation?
Xbox.
And Liz?
Oh, really?
What are you playing?
How is it?
You know, other than the videos I've seen online, it's the same thing. It really, very minimal differences in graphics.
Is it one disc?
No, it is, I think.
Wow. Discs. Oh, man.
What is it, like five?
Burn. No, wait, actually, how many discs do you have?
Uno. Just like Metal Gear Solid 4.
Just one. Oh, because it's the Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
I'm sure you could have put it on HD DVD if that had worked out.
Now, did you have to install that?
No, I just put the disc in and played. It was really weird. I was waiting for an install.
I'm with Ryan on this. That freaking every time I go to play my PlayStation, let me update for 20 minutes, and then after that, let me install the game for another 15 minutes every single time, and it makes me so mad every single time.
I know, that is really annoying, and so it was really bizarre when I just put the disc in, and it just worked. We're playing now.
What? Well, good for them. I'm glad they finally figured it out.
Square.
Maybe they just bypassed that whole.
Yeah. I'm sure they paid Sony like $800 million just for play it option.
They just unchecked the box on the dev kit that says make painful loading screen.
There is one painful thing in for the Xbox. When you put it in, I don't know why. Some games have this and some games don't, and I still don't understand why. When you put a game in and you load it, whether or not you've installed the game, it asks you sometimes for certain games where you want to load your save from. It doesn't immediately auto-detect your hard drive.
What are you talking about? Yeah.
It's weird. Like, not all games have that. That's true. It makes me think, why in the development cycle did they not do step one, load from hard drive?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, because they sell the stupid SKU that has the memory card only, what do they call it? The arcade pack. Which is what I bought when my old one red ringed and it was out of warranty. So I bought an arcade because it doesn't come with a hard drive, and then swapped my hard drive over. So I think it's decisions like that, but I can only assume. But so tell me about the game, guys. The last Final Fantasy I've played to completion was 10, and then the last one I actually played was the PlayStation 2. What was it? 12, I guess, right?
12, yeah.
And I only got not too far through it, I'll be honest. I mean, it's
you and everybody else.
Maybe six or 7 hours, which and I that guess game when I think was... about it, that's a lot of hours, but anyway.
Yeah, that game was rated so highly, though. That's the thing.
For the story, right? I always found the story in that one, really confusing, and maybe that's why people rated it higher. It's like, man, I have read freaking Chaucer. I have read, Shakespeare. I can understand a complex story. I just don't think this is a very good one.
I graduated high school and was forced to read Chaucer.
What?
For
no,
credits.
That was college. Come on.
You
I don't
read
know.
Chaucer in college, you baby. Oh, we were doing that shit like junior year high school.
Oh, no. You didn't take medieval lit? The worst class ever? Oh,
no, I think I took South American lit instead.
Medieval lit. If any kids are out there in college and you think that's an easy A, let me tell you, buddy, not an easy A. Take sci-fi fantasy for an easy A. That's
vampire fiction, which I think every college class has now.
It should have. Seriously, I'd be down with some Twilight over freaking Chaucer. Anyway, so guys, it's a good time. We tweeted the Jeremy Parrish and Justin Haywald one-up interview where they were totally wearing our stuff, which was awesome. But they were talking about Final Fantasy 13, rating it. I mean, what do you guys think? Liz, do you think it's awesome? Is it as good as the other ones? Well, tell me, should I go buy it?
I'll tell you something. I went into this game with very, very low expectations. I expected the story to be standard Japanese RPG fare. There's going to be a sweet girl, a spunky girl, and a serious girl. There's probably going to be one token black dude. There's going to be a buff hero. And there's going to be a little annoying kid who you may start to get used to, or you may just hate forever. And that's about what I got. So the game is extremely linear. It makes a Metal Gear game look like Mass Effect. So you'll never, you are given like no choices. The plot is what it is. It is a book where you are about to walk in a straight line.
This doesn't sound like you're having the best time from what you're saying now.
I am really enjoying it because I knew that's what it was going in.
Oh, so you've lowered those expectations so that now you could enjoy the $55 plus purchase you've made.
Yeah, it's a very, very pretty game. Mm-hmm. It's a somewhat interesting movie, and I do kind of like the paradigm shifting system in battle. It's a nice departure for the Final Fantasy series, and it's limited in its creativity. Like, there's not too much you can do where you're like, oh wow, this is the coolest thing ever, aside from like the first time you summon a summon or an Eidolon, I think is what they are in this one.
They don't call them summons because that would be reusing old content, I guess. Calling it a summon.
Eidolons was from 9, so they are reusing old content. Joke's on you, Garrett.
Well, I am not a Final Fantasy biologist, I'll be honest. But so just two things though. One, it sounds like overall it's enjoyable, but I'm interested when I finally get off and send you Heavy Rain to see if you enjoy that a lot more, because it is very, very linear, but the decisions you make are more, you know, they have more weight to them. And then in the end, they actually do reflect on what happens in the game, where it sounds like that is just kind of a roller
coaster ride. Isn't that the exact opposite of what linear is? Like, I think the fact that you're talking about a plot that has branches, by definition, is not linear.
Well, but it's still just one story, no matter how it goes through. Like, I feel like with RPGs, the whole point was that you could kind of pseudo make up your own stories based on what you decided to kind of do on your own time. But I guess that's more kind of an imaginary, oh yeah, I went and got a gold chocobo and then raced around and I became the chocobo champion, which, you know, there's no cutscenes for it, but it's your story. Not everyone necessarily does that.
You know what? Everybody got that gold chocobo, because why would you not get Knights of the Round?
Did you get a gold chocobo, Brian? I know you did.
Let's see. You know what? I think I breeded like a million times, never got it, and I just said, oh, I'm going to finish this game.
See? There you go, Liz. Wrong.
Yeah, well, he should have raced them up to S-Class, and then they would have had, like, blue, green, and black eggs.
Well, Brian.
But I did do it on a replay eventually. But
thank
like
you.
Years later.
Eventually, everybody does it. Everybody succumbs.
It's like drugs, basically. So,
it's like that.
Brian,
it's too good not to do.
Are you enjoying Final Fantasy 13? How far through it have you gotten?
I am enjoying a game that is called Final Fantasy 13. I am in agreement with Liz. I actually think this is a pretty good game. I had no expectations for it whatsoever. In fact, I think this would be a great game if it didn't even have Final Fantasy in the title. Like, I think this would have been a great game for its own series by itself.
But then what little animal would live in Saz's afro?
He could have easily had a talking afro pick. It would have been the same thing.
Jesus.
He could. That would have been awesome. Hilarious. It would have been, you know, the comic hero, you know,
no.
In his hair. It would have been awesome. Come on. You got to think about it for a second. Popping out going, I don't know, some cute voice. Maybe voiced by Selma Hayek or something. It would have been awesome.
So now it's a sexy hair pick.
Yes.
Actually, when he said Sam Hayek, I was like, actually, that does sound kind of cool.
or Eddie Murphy.
No, he is so tainted to me now from all those stupid animal movies he did.
But he was good as the dragon in Mulan, so he clearly has the capacity.
Well, every voice actor has one good Disney movie, and then that's their last best voice acting.
And then that's it.
Okay,
so I have one very important question. And I think everyone who listens to the podcast at this point knows me and Japanese RPGs really don't get along for the most part. They're just too boring. Is the combat in this one somehow as good as 10 or better? Because 10 is still, for me, the only one that I've actually enjoyed the combat.
I think it's better than 10 because I think everything moves at a much faster pace.
Oh, that's
10
good.
Had a lot of these battles where it was like, now we're going to phase 2. Now we're going to phase 3. Oh, Seymour just brought out his elemental shield.
There
now
were a lot, yes.
Is there still is there an active time bar where you're waiting for it to fill up, or is it the just who goes next?
Yes and no.
Yeah, it's not a who goes next thing. Each character has their own individual active time bar, but the thing is, only you only control your leader. Your other two party members are controlled by AI.
Oh, so they've taken that from Final Fantasy 12 then, the whole Gambit system. Yeah. I honestly don't know if I really I liked not having to control the other characters, but I didn't like how sometimes they would do things that I didn't really think were the smartest things.
You can smarten them up if you have them scan, like if you use this ability called Libra that scans an enemy for its strengths.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That sort of thing. But, like, those do stupid things if you don't tell them what it's weak against or immune to, but...
You can kind of change it a little bit more in this time. You can... They each have... well, to segue into classes, they each have their own class that they can, you know, you can decide to develop. And then you can give them sort of like commands almost. Like you can commit like a command system. Like you want this person to always be a medic. You want this person to always be a commander. And they have different abilities in those sets. And they'll use those instead of like, you know, one might have, you know, fire in one set and the other one might have cure in the other set. And then you can actually
switch them mid-battle.
Yes, you're not limited to using them the entire time or until you get out of the battle. You can actually switch a mid-battle and change up your strategy, which is actually kind of neat.
It is cool. The focus of the battle system is that there's the six different classes, which are basically a tank class, a physical attack class, a magic attack class, a healer, a buffer, and a debuffer. And you can go through those six classes by arranging them into sets of three, one for each character in your team, called paradigms. And as you change the team's paradigm, it's called a paradigm shift, and yada, yada, yada. It's kind of cool in practice. It makes things interesting because you're actively involved. And it's not something like Final Fantasy, any of the previous games, where you can kind of take your eyes off the battle to go get a glass of water. You have to be paying attention in this, especially since, Brian, I don't know if you figured this out, but you know how your ATB bar, like say you're using lightning and you get the four ATB attacks? If you switch paradigms right at the end of her fourth one going up, like her finishing that attack, by shifting paradigms, it fills up the four automatically again. Like every other turn, you can do that. And it's pretty easy to time.
That is a helpful tip. Thank you.
You are quite welcome. Matt told me because he saw it on YouTube. So, and it's one of those things that they specifically put in the game. It's not like a glitch. It's to encourage you to shift paradigms more frequently.
So, okay. We've been talking about it for a while, but before we move on to other stuff, I have one question then. Is there a lot of overhead to these paradigm shifts in terms of having to set them up outside of a battle and figuring out what do you want to do? Because if it takes a lot of time to customize what you want to do, that would totally turn me off from the whole thing again.
Not really.
It's pretty straightforward. It's pretty like, you can like Liz said, you can be a tank, you can be a medic.
Like a set it and forget it sort of thing. You just do it once and you're good for the rest of the game.
The thing is, this is a game that will constantly be switching your party around on you. Much like Final Fantasy VI and some of the earlier Final Fantasy games, you don't get your full team of six together in one place for a long time. It's constantly switching back. Now you're with these two people, now you're with those two people. And since certain people only have certain classes available to them until the late game, you need to go rearrange your paradigm deck pretty much every time it changes who your characters you're operating are.
So then, if you level up, what does that give you? More like, is it like the sphere grid?
It's like the sphere grid. It's the Crystarium.
So you guys both played at least enough of 12 to know its level up system, right?
I didn't play it, but I heard a little bit.
Between the two of them, what do you think, Brian? 12 or 10 or this one? Did they marry the two together and it's a better?
I think
outcome?
To me, it feels like they married the two and tried to pick the, you know, the best out of the two, which in my opinion really wasn't much to find the good. I mean, I still miss the old, you level up and then,
Then
you distribute some points. This has points the entire time that you can distribute whenever you want.
See, that's what I like, how it's similar to the sphere grid, how you're constantly figuring out, like, I can level the commando and put 20 into hit points, or I can level my ravager and maybe open the water spell, like, and you can kind of change it, like, well, next time I'm going to level my medic. It's, you're not confined in the way you are by having one character who levels up and just learns all the same stuff.
Oh, I did like the sphere grid, but
I love the sphere grid.
I am looking forward to it. Maybe, I don't know, how far are you from finishing it, Liz? Or do you know?
I'm 10 hours in, but I'm a slow player because I'm spending all my time upgrading weapons, which I know I shouldn't since it doesn't pay off until the late game, but I like collecting items and wasting my time.
Well, maybe what will incentivize you to do it faster is if I send you Heavy Rain and then you have to send me that game so I can play it and then not have to buy it.
Well, I'll have to wait for Matt to finish, too. We're both playing it simultaneously.
He seems like... I don't worry about him finishing it, to be honest. Yeah. I think he'll really get that done.
He'll get bored with it, though.
Yeah, or that, which I think is fine because he's got WoW to play. But, all right, well, let's take a break here for some more fun music, and let's move into some Fangamer news. All right, Fangamer News, we finally have the man with the plan for the booth here. PAX East Boston is happening very, very soon. Hopefully you have your ticket because it's probably too late to get one now. I hope to see you there. We're going to do something with a podcast live, not a panel. Maybe we'll do something fun at the booth or we'll have like a get-together or I don't know what, but it's going to be great. And when we know what it is, we'll find a way to let you know. But... the guy who is building the sweet home for Fangamer at PAX East is here. Brian, tell us what it's like to build a booth and to do something like this. I mean, you have a lot of set design experience. Is this drastically different? Is this just as hard? Or what do you think?
It is a little different. Most of the time, I don't really design that often, but I usually read off of blueprints. These are blueprints that I have worked with John K on, Jonk. Where it's pretty much I want this height, this size, this width, and make two of these or one of these. And it's pretty straightforward stuff. It's mostly countertops or display cabinets. I feel more like I'm building furniture rather than a set. But in a way, it still is a set because there are technically set pieces and stuff. If you come,
because it's more collapsible and has to be taken apart and everything.
Yeah, it's like. I feel like I'm making a set for a black box theater, which is experimental stage where you can move things around and you can make it whatever you want. We've actually designed this so we can reuse this in the future, and it could be a totally different looking booth, even though it's made out of the exact same pieces.
Oh, that's cool.
So we've actually, I had to do a white model to give John and Reed an example of what I was thinking. And a white model is pretty much a scaled version of... what you're building, like a model. And I sent them that, and they were like, holy crap, we can actually move this wherever we want. So we came up with, like, I think 5 or 6 other designs before we decided on the design we have now, but all based on the exact same pieces that we were building the entire time.
So we can kind of, like, the idea of IKEA a little bit. You can buy different pieces, kind of hook them all together, modular style, and come up with a different thing. And... for those of you who are really bored with this, I'm sorry, but we did get feedback from some awesome listener who I had his email up before I rebooted my computer, who was like, hey, I'd love to hear more about the business things that happen with Fangamer. And this is for you, buddy, because that's one of the best emails we've gotten.
It was a beautifully written, very complimentary, specifically complimentary.
Yes, very
we
specific
love compliments
feedback.
That are specific.
Like, we like this, and I'd love to know more about how Fangamer runs. And that's actually one of the things that I really want to move the podcast more towards. And even if it ends up alienating people, that we spend 10 minutes every show talking about what things have worked well for us and what haven't, I'd like to move more towards that. But anyway, more in the PAX booth. So it's all whiteboard based. You can kind of draw on. Is it really every square inch of the booth or just a certain area?
Well, the way John, myself, and Reed all designed this together is really interactive with our fans, really. If you come up to the booth, whether you purchase something or not, which you should, and I highly recommend the PK Rockin' shirt.
Is that your favorite?
Oh, wait. There isn't a PK Rockin' shirt, is there?
There?
What is it called?
There may be something there. I know what you're talking about. No, it's the PSI Rockin' or PK Rockin'.
Are we allowed to talk? Like, we had the voting for the different colors people wanted to see, right?
Oh, I don't know that we're going to necessarily have new colors, but, I mean, I'm pretty sure we're bringing some amalgamation of that. If not, I'm sorry if we don't. I hear someone typing. They're probably looking it up right now.
I'm checking it. Psyrocket. Hey, let's backpedal real quick so I don't sound like I don't know what the merchandise is.
It doesn't
is.
Matter. I'm probably not going to edit it out anyway. So,
all right. It's
Psyrocket. Close enough. People know.
I think a lot of people call it PK Rockin' by mistake. I do
only because I prefer the PK. I do.
I do too, to be honest. Because I always thought it was PSI. Too close. I thought it was pounds per square inch rockin'.
Too close.
But yeah, so we it was Reed had this grand idea to make the whole thing you could draw on it with dry erase marker. And John totally supported it. And I was like, all right, that's really cool too. Let's do that. And so I came with a couple designs, and then we decided that we want a whiteboard wall. And originally you were just gonna write on the whiteboard wall. Then Reed's like, oh, let's draw on the whole thing. And I'm going, okay, whole thing. So that was almost like we could do it, but this is what it'll take to do it. And I actually, for a week straight, bought small samples of materials to build with, and tested a bunch of white dry erase board markers, including permanent markers, including the elusive super permanent marker, which when they mean super permanent, they really mean super permanent. And by complete accident, after testing all these solvents to clean it, OxyClean, Fierce Force, everything, there's a stronger OxyClean out there, and rest his soul, Billy Mays is still making them.
Somehow.
From heaven.
He's like Tupac. He's still really alive designing products.
He is like Tupac. There'll be another OxyClean next year. You're going to all buy it. You'll love it.
Yeah. OxyClean Resurrection.
By complete accident, I was in Target, and I found this solution that comes with this dry erase marker that cleans everything, including super permanent marker. And I was like, this is the answer. So because I found that, I didn't have to worry about designing a boot with a specific material and being afraid that if someone draws a dicker doodle right underneath the Fangamer logo, it'll never come off.
Or Fruit or any of that, which I know I'm going to have to bleep, but it's worth it. I love the Fruit Lover. He's great.
So yeah. That was a little bit of a challenge, but it was also a lot of fun just buying a bunch of markers for like a week straight and saying, all right, does this work? No. Or how about this? No. What if I go to Michael's? No.
I have an idea for the markers that I want to pitch to you people. I want to...
Oh, man, this is unscripted, folks.
This is unscripted.
Crap.
I was thinking everyone who's working the booth should get, like, acid-wash skinny jeans, like, real tight up in there, and gets, like, real tight white t-shirts, like, all the guys, I don't care, throw some water on it, whatever. And then we take these markers, and we say to the customers, if you buy something, I'll let you draw on me wherever you want.
Oh. Wow.
If I was more
Bill's
hot,
pants will be filled instantly.
Bill will draw on them himself to look popular. Look what all these girls drew on me.
I'm kind of intrigued, but I'm also kind of disgusted because
you know what?
I'm going to be on the floor for a lot of the time, and I don't want people drawing on me.
I think what we should do, Liz, you just gave me an idea. You know when you go to a restaurant and they have like craft paper on the tables for the kids?
Yes, those are the only restaurants I go to.
I think we should. Every time someone comes up, we all need to learn how to spell our name backwards and be like, hi, I'm, Liz Bose, and I'll be serving you today. How can I fulfill your Fangamer need?
I don't know.
That's going to get some really bad responses.
And then people walk away and we don't sell anything. And,
and they'll go to the Nintendo booth and go play Mario.
Okay,
let's steer this away from perverseness.
I have a legit booth question, actually.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Please, Liz,
did
go.
I don't remember. Did we implement the thing where we would have, like, a TV playing the game? Cool. So is it going to have to be playing video, or someone will be actually playing the game?
I believe it's going to be playing video, but we're going to try. And what Liz is talking about, for those who haven't seen the model, but there will be pictures, hopefully, within the week of the completed booth. On the top right corner of the booth on this big stanchion is a TV that'll have videos that Steve has made, some that you've seen during his office cams, some other videos that I think he has in production. Don't quote me on that. And some games being played. We believe we can play. We might have someone playing games and playing on that TV. If not, it will be some videos possibly. We're not sure, but there will be something playing on a large TV.
Well, we won't be the only ones with large TVs, but ours will have, Steve's videos. That's what I can say for sure. That should bring you to the booth and enjoy what we see. But let's, before I forget, because I'm probably going to forget, so I'm going to say it now. Office Cam is actually only going to be Fridays from now going forward, although hopefully you'll be hearing this tomorrow and you've already realized there wasn't an Office Cam today.
Yeah.
We're going to be cutting those back to once a week. I think there's still a possibility that in the future we'll be moving back into a three-day-a-week model, but for the time being, there's a lot going on, and to try and guarantee a certain quality for our viewing audience, we're going to cut it back to one day a week. So it's unfortunate, but I'm sure you'll all get your fix of Fangamer awesomeness by just listening to the podcast every week, Monday, Wednesday, to kind of make up for that. At least that's what I'm going to be doing. So what else do we need to cover Fangamer news? I think that's it, right? The booth, Office Cam. Am I missing anything else good? Everyone should come to PAX and enjoy themselves if you're going to be there. We're going to do some sort of meetup. That's something else I should mention. We have literally just started talking about this today.
Oh, we're going to do like an open air meetup, like for a Michigan Con when one person came.
Well, hopefully not like that. All of the people who are fans of Fangamer and Starma.net, hopefully get them all together at some place off-site and have a good time. Ryan, head of the party planning committee, will hopefully have figured out some logistics to it, but we'll put some more details up once we have them. But, you know, if you're in town, you want to hang out, hopefully there'll be some pizza or something there. We'll see.
But find the local Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
And even if nobody comes, there's still like 30 of us just from the site showing
that,
up.
That is true. We are very strong at this thing. I don't know if this booth is going to be big enough for everyone.
That's true. I mean, if we just had all the people who are affiliated with us, I mean, that's still, you know, 8 or 9 people. So it'll be good to. Oh, that's what I was going to say. Our buddies from Ubzy Movies, is that how you say it?
Oopsie?
Whatever. Whatever the correct way to say it is, Jeff Benson and will be there, and he's going to be recording and doing a bunch of video capture and fun segments. So we're going to use him to extract the PAX experience and condense it down into something lovely that you folks who don't get to go can hopefully feel like you were there in a little bit of a sense. So look forward to that. Not sure exactly what we'll have him do, but it'll be awesome. So, all right, let's transition to the show topic. Video games that I feel, I mean, for me it goes like outside of video games because they're like D&D, because a lot of stuff spawned out of D&D with your classic fighter,
right?
Rogue, mage.
Well, that's Final Fantasy 1 right there.
That's true.
And yeah, that's there's just, what are the basic classes? And wouldn't you just say it's like your healer, your tank, your like physical assault person, whatever you call that.
Some sort of DPS. I know it's WoW terms. That your guy does damage.
Some sort of buffer, debuffer is always in there.
Your magic.
It's usually a soldier, a thief, a wizard, and then a healer.
Priest.
Priest. There you go.
Those are really the main ones.
That's your core classes. So many games emulate that. But okay, so.
And honestly, all the other classes that you see in games are just kind of a mix of those four basic elements. You either hit hard, you heal, you take hits, or you have some sort of utility like stealing.
Which makes sense, because the core mechanic for every game is still, they do this much damage in this much time to you, you do the same different sort of ratio back to them, you have this many hit points to absorb it with. I mean, when you're looking at those same constraints for how your character loses, I can see where those are the same four kind of character classes that always seem to build back up. Because, I mean, D&D's rules are not too different from video games in terms of once your hit points hit zero, your guy's knocked out, now you're rolling to try and come back to life. So that's kind of the, we'll call that the proto version of our character classes. So what do you guys feel? What is your some of the more interesting classes that you enjoy. Let's start with Brian.
Actually, one interesting class I like and prefer is the ninja class from Final Fantasy Tactics.
Oh, because they're so overpowered, right?
Yeah, oh, they are so overpowered. There's nothing more overpowered than learning the two-handed move from a ninja and then switching to, like, a knight and just having, yeah, like Excalibur and save the queen, and you pretty much, you don't need the rest of your party. That's it.
Yeah, especially if it's Cid.
But yeah. Okay, but that's why it's fun, because it's overpowered. Maybe for me, from Final Fantasy Tactics, a class that I enjoy more, I wouldn't say is enjoyable because they're overpowered, is what do they call them? Like the engineer, the Mustadio, that guy.
Machinist, one of those.
They use the guns, right?
Yeah, they change it up depending on which version and which translation you do. But they're the only class really allowed to use guns besides chemists. But they have the ability to seal evil, to shoot someone in the arm, shoot someone in the leg.
That's a way to diversify classes outside the basic hit points. What you're talking about with the engineer is that they can input don't act or don't move. When you have characters where the position in the battle matters, then I feel like you can get a lot more diversity from classes, because you can have characters have different ranges of movements and you can affect movement with other classes.
Yeah, because in Tactics, you know, your thief has a really high speed and gets to go earlier, but like rogues and most historical classes, low hit points, easily killable, but does a lot of damage. And especially in Tactics, you know, your ability to steal is one of your most valuable resources, because you can get the best items in the game through, you know, jacking them from the best characters in the game. So, you know, Tactics, especially...
Well, the best items in that game are all from the chemist skill move find item. Like, that's... There's no question about
really?
That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most
I thought
of
you
them.
Could still get...
Do that dark dungeon or whatever.
But you still have to just find them in the dark dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's this one set of armor that's extremely hard to get from one of the later bosses.
Genji
armor. Yeah, I think that's the only place you can get it, other than like a random drop, I think.
I'll tell you something. Garrett probably doesn't know that, because in the new version, the War of the Lions, or whatever they called it, they actually had Elmdor using the ability where it was impossible to steal from him. I don't know why they added that in that new version, because stealing from Elmdor is one of the hardest and most rewarding things you can do in that game.
It is, because you get so many tries before he just kills you.
Mm-hmm. And the status effects he puts on you. I think, what is he, like a mixture of a samurai? Yeah, he's a samurai, but he's also got these vampire secondary abilities that are just brutal.
Well, to go off topic a little bit, I'm still waiting for them to do some sort of game like the Tactics game, but online, where you really get to play against other people. Can you imagine having your own like team of guys that you actually fight other players against, like an online chess sort of thing, but way more, you know, tactic style? Gosh, that'd be so much fun.
I always thought, like, I think that's one of the weaknesses of the MMOs, is that you can only really pick one class, or like in the case of something like Final Fantasy XI, you can pick a class and a subclass. But I feel like there need to be more games that you control your own team, and it's the balance of the different classes that you use that make the strategy interesting.
I have to say, yeah, for class games, it's the one where you have a team that I enjoy the most, because I played WoW for many years, and I always had multiple characters that I ended up playing, because not any particular one met all the what I was interested in doing at any time. And with the tactics games, you can fulfill all of that. But you know, for me, I played WoW as a rogue, and the experience I had, you know, raiding and doing in-game content was drastically different from when I went and played as a hunter, where I didn't really get to do anything but just kind of do the same two buttons over and over.
Hey, you had some work on Magmadar.
Yeah, that was the one fight. But it's like, if you have half a brain and you know how to, when you have all these mods that say, push the whatever button right now, that's your only job, press this button.
Yeah, you'd think nobody ever wiped a Magmadar, but you'd be wrong.
I never got my pants off that bastard.
I got so much loot from him. It was sick.
Magmadar. Well, okay, we're in WoW. Let's talk about WoW's classes again, because this is an interesting place where class balance is huge.
Yeah, in the absolutely.
Game. Much with like Diablo, where they have to keep balancing the classes in that game, here it's even more so, because there's so much PvP and endgame content that you'll find a way to kind of exploit something. Like, I remember our guild found a way to totally cheat on, what was it? Two places in Blackwing Lair. There's that very first fight where you're cracking all the eggs open.
Razor Gore.
Right. And if your guild, like, was going to wipe, but so we didn't have to go all the way out and everyone had to do the spirit walk, we would have a paladin use, I just forgot the name.
But the bubble thing?
It's the invulnerability bubble, but it's a little bit different, where, like, nothing can happen to you, like, for, like, a full minute. You can't move, can't do anything, you just stand there for, like, a minute. And when we would do that, it would, like, drop battle. It has a really long cooldown, whatever it is. And then, because they couldn't be killed, then the battle would just kind of stop, and the boss would just, you know, respawn back to the middle, and all the eggs would come back, but everyone would be dead, but then that one paladin would still be alive, and then he would go and res everyone, and then we wouldn't have to all walk back to our bodies, which is great. But, you know, class balance is one of those things that, yeah, they're always tweaking, they're always changing it. I know Liz's experience with WoW. Have you ever been subject to that, those changes made the class no longer fun or worth
playing? Oh, yeah. As a warrior, I was constantly subjected to the class time. No longer being fun to play. But
now, is that more hurtful to the game itself? I mean, like an MMO, to me, with classes, has always seemed like, unless you do a lot of research how to exploit your class or set your class up, if you don't do it right, you're stuck with what you just did. Like, I don't really play WoW, but can you change your class?
You could redistribute your points, but it was at a very high cost, depending on how many times you've done it. But in the recent version, they've done the, what's it called, the dual spec, where you can just choose two different ones and switch back and forth between the two without any monetary.
But the problem is, every patch, stuff gets changed. So, like, a spec, like, if you're a Death Knight and, say, for one patch, Unholy is incredible, and then you spec that way, and then the next patch suddenly, I don't know, what is another one? Blood is incredible, and then Unholy is garbage. I mean, that's the problem where you're playing a live game like that, where other players are interacting with you. And you also have the problem with the World of Warcraft, where you constantly have people asking for every expansion, what's the next class you're going to add?
Yeah.
But you reach a point where I don't know what class that game really needs, and I feel like the Death Knight is extraneous.
Yeah, that's interesting, because we talked about at the very beginning here, those core classes, and WoW has a very set, you know, keeping to that same formula, but then it just adds, I feel, just different DPS classes. Your rogue, your hunter.
Yeah. A lot of hybrid classes.
Yeah, like, those hybrid classes. The way it's going. Like, where you got been...
heal. Like, the druid is the consummate hybrid class, and where you can tank, heal.
Have you played a druid very much?
Because I played druid to level four.
I played one to 70. But that was well after I'd played the game a lot. And my wife, that was the first class that she played up to 70 and or to 6. I don't know, whatever she got to. But the druid was so much fun because it's a tank and it's a DPS and it's a healing. And it's so much fun because, again, you could do these ridiculous things that no one else in the game can do. Like, you could fight certain elite mobs that would take a team of three or four people by yourself, because you could tank them.
As a warrior, I resented that so much.
You could tank them, and then you could use your stun move, and then shift out of your bear form, heal yourself up to full, go back into bear form while they're still stunned, go back in, hit them a bunch more times, and they're about ready to die, switch into cat to kind of finish them off.
Ever watch two druids duel? It is like
the boringest thing in the world.
Oh my god.
Because they can
regenerate their mana. It's just terrible.
Who knows when to shift into the right class, right?
Absolutely awful.
Right.
My dream is to see a 5-on-5 with 10 druids.
I'm sure someone.
I don't think I've ever seen it, but.
Okay, let's get out of WoW, because I think we do give WoW a lot of credit on our podcast in general, even though neither of us really play anymore. It's got 10 million players. Right?
I think it'd be all right.
I don't play anymore. Do you use playlist? All right, sorry for that brief interruption here. We've had a minor issue. Brian, explain what just happened.
So for the past couple of days in Jersey, it's been thunderstorming, like literally 3 days straight. High winds, you know, cows flying if we have any cows. It's been insane. So it's been pretty windy outside, and I'm surprised the mic hasn't picked it up. And finally, the wind gave out, and I lost power, actually, three times. So after three attempts at restarting my computer and then my power going, no, not yet. I'm finally back. But yeah, I'm sorry. Did I miss the exciting discussion about WoW? I was almost done writing the Great American Novel.
No, we're kind of done with WoW. But actually, because we were afraid you were going to drop off, we brought in our buddy Ann Kay to kind of sit in for you in case you were completely gone. But now my dog's barking in the background. So while I go take care of my dog, I'm going to let Ann and Brian and Liz talk about character classes and video games. And Liz is going to run the podcast for the next 5 minutes.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
You got this, Liz? So bring her up to speed. What's going on?
There are ants everywhere on my floor. But aside from that, which happened during the brief interlude, what we've been discussing during the podcast is the different classes that appear in gaming. Like, the basic classes that every game basically has are your healer, your tank, your DPS, like damage class, and then some sort of utility thief buff, debuff type thing. So there's not that much diversity when you break it down, but we're talking about how there's so many different games out there and there's so many different classes they've added on. Like, I love personally the gambler class because I always like the idea of playing with dice and reels as a legitimate attack.
Have you guys touched on the conversation that most of the healers or a lot of the magic or summoning classes are usually played by female characters?
No. We didn't touch on it, but you know what? That is so true. Like, when
is it really?
I can say this since Garrett's gone, but when he was like, yeah, my wife's first class was a druid, I wanted to be like, no surprise there.
Well, why is that, though?
I don't know. You could go into some evolutionary psychology and say it's because of their nurturing nature, but I think...
Now, is it really a girl, though? Is it a guy playing as a girl? Come on.
No.
It's a legitimate thing. Women tend to play as healers or magic-intensive classes, and guys tend to play as... a lot of your tanks are going to be men. A lot of your rogues are probably going to be men.
But this is War II? What is this, World War II? We're only going to have the women be like, you know, the medics and the healers and the...
Yeah, I don't really know what the draw is. Personally, I've always liked playing the tank class. Like, I liked the heavy, I liked the warrior in World of Warcraft, I liked all the knights and tactics, and I find snow annoying in Final Fantasy XIII, but I like the idea of having a sentinel on the team, because right now I'm getting torn up to shreds, and I feel like
now,
I miss him.
Is it the dresses, maybe? The clothes?
Dresses and clothes for you to change into?
I think that might be part of it, is because they are like a cloth caster class. They don't have as much bulky armor. There's generally fewer skulls per square inch on them.
That was a serious comment, too, because I've noticed that female magic users usually are the best dressed out of everybody. Like,
yeah.
They look like they're going to be the belle of the ball.
The Toreador, I believe, is without class.
That's the technical term.
Although I think that's a race, if we are being specific.
No, we're not going there. So wait, are we moving to Final Fantasy XIII or TF2 yet, or where are we at right now, Liz?
What we talked about was Anne brought up the very interesting point that when playing multiplayer RPGs where you can only pick one class, women, for whatever reason, tend to gravitate towards healers and magic-based classes. Garrett, like, from your experience with WoW, yeah, you'd agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because when you say that you played a tank, that's very unusual.
It is.
Although, what were you, like, were you an undead female?
Yeah. I'll tell you, there were two undead warrior females that I knew of on Mal'Ganis. Me and Matt. So.
Oh, that's so cute.
Well, Liz, I'm not surprised. You are a brick house.
I am. That was me hitting my abs. They're awesome.
Well, okay, let's...
T-shirt.
So, I wanted to talk about tactics in World of Warcraft. Brian, what games did you want to talk about? Did we hit those?
I actually have two. And they're sort of different in the way their classes are set up. One is Suikoden, and that's pretty much
Suikoden.
Suikoden.
What's Suikoden?
Is it Suikoden? I've heard it's
Suikoden,
Suikoden.
I've heard Suikoden. I think that's
that name I can't pronounce, but I like their characters. That's a game where there's tons of characters. They all have a class, but they're all different classes. So that one's a class based on characters. And those kind of games, like Suikoden or Sokoden or whatever, I've always felt that the class is it pertains to the person's character, like their actual personality. That's one part of it. You don't have much choice, but you do have the choice in who you use and if you like their character, who they are, or what they can do. Another game I wanted to discuss was actually Oblivion. Although it's a Western RPG.
Oh my god.
They, which is a bad word, apparently.
Yeah.
It's
Tomb Raider and Hitman.
Right. So says the director of Final Fantasy series. In Oblivion, you can pick your class, and you can also pick your race, which apparently will affect how your class develops to a certain degree. It's not as finite as it sounds.
Well, it's had a little bit of that.
It's a little bit where you can actually develop who you are, not only as a player, but as a character. So there is class, and then there's literally class, what kind of person you are. So that's one thing I don't think a lot of people think about when they think a class for a character is who they are.
It's pretty deep. I think Lobo thinks about it, though. Reading his posts, I think he definitely thinks about it. Brian, you guys should get together and write a term paper about that.
Actually, reading his post made me think of that, going, maybe there is more class, even though I think you read the question wrong.
You know, actually, race and class are tied a little bit up in this situation. Can any race be any class in Oblivion?
Let's see. Can any race be any class? I think so, actually.
Because a lot of games have restrictions like that. Like, I remember Tactics Advance for Final Fantasy brought in the bunny people, the Moogles, and they can only certain races could be certain classes.
Apparently, only the bunny people have enough aim to be archers.
Yeah. That's true. And women, apparently.
Oh, of course.
They're like Mass Effect, that one planet full of nothing but women. And I love how they explain how they procreate, and they don't even attempt to explain it in Final Fantasy, which
sounds
is
like mini episodes of Star Trek, come to think
of it.
Well,
Mass Effect is Star Trek.
it's a planet of Amazons.
Amazons.
Here, I'll tell you how all of those races procreate, because they went into it in Ocarina of Time. The thing is, like, the Gerudos are all women, but apparently, like, one of the NPCs says something about how whenever they want to go make more Gerudos, they just go into the marketplace and seduce one of the, like, Hyrule market men, and then just leave with
their genes. Obviously.
Yeah.
They're like, the best appropriate.
It's not the most well-thought-out plan, and I'm sure Ganondorf did help propagate the race a little bit, but...
Mm. So he was just some guy who was selling, like, weird, like, used, like, Gucci purses off the side of the road, and then he ended up being like, oh, okay, I'll take over this thing, too. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Good times. Okay, well, let's move into some more of the comments. Wait, no. Did you get to discuss, besides women being characterized in games of certain classes, is there a specific game with classes that you do like, or a particular one that was your favorite?
Well, that's a really good question.
Because, if you think of games like Earthbound, there's really not a class, so to speak, like a tank or a DPS class.
But you can break them down. I mean, it's your physical assault, your mage, your engineer, and then, like...
But everyone can heal, kind of, because you use food. Well, I don't know. What do you think, Anne? What are some of your favorite classes from games?
Well, technically, Paula doesn't heal anybody. She doesn't have heal magic. The only character can heal.
Which was very uncharacteristic.
Yeah, which is...
It is very uncharacteristic.
Good job, Earthbound.
And which is one of the interesting things that really kind of caught me of the game. But there's a couple of things in the translation that don't really translate over, like when you rescue Paula from the cabin, she, you know, in the English translation, she says something, oh, if you didn't come, I would have cried. And it's like, yeah, but you have magic powers that are, yeah, whatever.
Well, doesn't she in the English translation say something like, I would have had to blast these doors off? Am I imagining that? Okay.
So it's like, you know, when it comes to a Western audience, it's almost like, you know, they play down, you know, a more aggressive female to I don't know, maybe sell games, or I don't know, maybe they think that girls don't really play games over here in North America, but...
Maybe back then, they might have had a fair estimate
of
that.
Yeah, in 1994, not too many people in general play them except for kids.
Yeah.
That's true.
And dads who loved Doom.
or dads who loved Fantasia, but they only watched. That's what I heard.
They just like to watch.
Oh, okay. So, let's get into the topic from the forum and talk about some of the games that people brought up. Let's see, what do we got in here? We have some. Do we talk about Team Fortress 2? Floyd Head 24 and Raw Power talk about Team Fortress 2 classes. Mm-hmm. Have we brought that up yet? I don't think we have.
Right? We haven't, but I think we all have a class we all like in that game because they're so cool. How can you not?
Okay, let's start at the bottom here on my Skype list. Liz, what is your favorite class from Team Fortress 2?
I like the heavy because I will always like classes that are.
You
based
like to back up. You like
going...
the W key.
No, I'm an S key all star. Yeah, I like. I just think the simplest, best class is always the class where all you do is go in and you attack and you hope that somebody else is there to heal you.
You would love Dynasty Warriors. That's all I have to say. Okay, Brian, what's your Team Fortress 2 favorite class?
Now. Originally, I thought the same thing as Liz. I liked the heavy because I actually thought he was an interesting character in general. I loved his accent and his craziness. But it was just simply attack, attack, attack. So I decided to mix with all the others. This is the only game I ever play as a medic. I hate being the healer in any other game except for this one. I love being the medic in this game.
The medic is a pretty cool character, too. I mean, he does play his little bonesaw violin.
You took mine. That's what I was going to say. That's the only game I'll heal in because I feel like it takes a certain amount of brains to be able to heal people effectively.
And not die in the process.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, okay, because I want us to win, I'm just going to do it because no one else will. But
like, there are so many people who play the medic who don't realize if you're you know, healing a heavy, stand behind him. He's huge. He's big. Just hide behind the giant.
You've seen that
Penny
Arcade shirt,
yes,
right?
Where
it's like,
and it,
shoot this guy.
It's true. There have been so many times where, this game's been out for how long now? And there's so many times where I'll be a medic, and they'll be shooting the heavy, and I'm like, I'm healing him. There's a gigantic rainbow going towards him. Shoot me.
Yeah, he's glowing.
He's, you know, don't shoot the guy that I'm healing. Shoot the guy that's healing him. But they still
won.
Which
the first rule of RPGs, kill the healer first.
Mm-hmm.
And have you played Team Fortress 2?
Actually, no, I haven't played Team Fortress 2.
That's good, because that means you have more productivity in your life, because Team Fortress 2 sucks away souls like WoW does, I think.
And Left 4 Dead doesn't?
Hey, no, that's not true, because there's no classes in Team Fortress 2. It's zombies,
you mean Left 4
special
Dead 2?
Zombies, yeah, whatever, that, and
humans. There's Left 4 Dead classes, sort of.
Well, just the enemies have like specialized ones, but everybody else, I guess you're right, they do, because they have the tank class, that's literally called the tank, the chargers who kind of run in, and they have, they're more of a
the
DPS.
Witch cries.
The witch is sort of a tank DPS at the same time, kind of your battle mage, I guess.
That's your hybrid class.
Yes.
Sometimes that's red mages, and sometimes that's like green mages, they give them different
yeah,
in every
red
game.
Mage. You got your spitter, who's your
archer,
AOE class, some sort of weird mage, I'd say, and then your hunter, which is like your rogue, and your the smoker. Oh, I don't know what a smoker would be though, because they just kind of use the tongue attack to grab you. They're kind of your like your warlock. You know, they use the buffs, debuff sort of thing.
Have we touched on the topic of the classes that we absolutely can't stand?
We haven't, but if
we
you
have
one,
that's a good
I'd
topic.
Love to hear one, because I have plenty.
Yeah, me too.
But if you could only choose one, he would be sitting on a big throne waiting for all the other crappier classes, ruling over them.
I'll answer first, because I know my answer off the top of my head. I can't stand being any type of priest or white mage or healer. I just feel like it's an inefficient waste of time. The best way to keep yourself healed is to kill what's trying to keep your damage.
The best offense is a good offense and not a good defense.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Kill them before they kill you. That is the secret of life.
I don't really have like a certain class that I hate, but I hate any single character that's played by a child.
You hate like, JRPGs then, because...
hate children.
I'm sorry, I'm really hating Hope right now.
What if it's a child named Hope?
I have to agree with you on Hope. Hope is a girl's name, and plus, man up.
He's trying. He's like, he gets better as the game goes on, sort of.
Sucks.
For me, I'm gonna go back to Final Fantasy Tactics. Okay. I'd even take Squire, I think, over, what do they call him? Like Beastmaster?
Yeah, Beastmaster.
I hate... Oh, no. Sorry, not Beastmaster. Beast Tamer? I'm thinking Geomancer. I hate me some Geomancers.
Are you kidding? Geomancer was my favorite in that. I had a Geomancer liar. Dancer who was
you
the
hate
business.
Geomancer like I love Golem then from Pokemon. Seriously. Geomancer? Oh. They have the little... what are they wearing? Ponchos? Like they're going to the taco truck? No.
Yeah.
the taco truck.
I'm not loving the Geomancers at all.
Monk's I thought the Geomancer girl had pretty hair.
She had the same hair as whatever the character class did, or the actual character was, I thought. But
no, it's the style changes every class. They have a different hairstyle, and some of them are pretty.
You'd know that. I wouldn't.
She has the Sasami pigtails, but only in the front.
You say so. That's I don't really remember. Okay, let me see here. Well, let's move on to some more of the topics.
I got
here.
One.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm going to look through here while you do that.
All right. I got – it's kind of a mix. It's the bard and the dancer.
Oh, you hate those guys, huh?
I never understood the purpose. They really just do status effects.
Have you ever done karaoke? Wait, have you ever done karaoke?
No.
I think that's the allure. Karaoke is kind of fun.
I guess that's why they have that, because I've never understood the importance of having one character that can pretty much do status effects. While it would have just been easier just to kill them instead of...
Even D&D has
you know,
that now.
I'll tell you the use of the dancer. The bard, I kind of agree with you. The buffs across the board is not incredibly useful, but what I would always use the dancer for in Final Fantasy Tactics, at least, is they had a spell. I don't remember what it's called, but every round it would drain like 20 MP from everybody on the map. And when you're facing a map load of wizards or other caster classes that you can't get to before they can get to you... That is incredibly useful to be able to deplete their mana pool like that from far away.
Hmm.
I always use the engineers to seal leg or whatever it was. They couldn't move forward and couldn't get to me. I had a.
They
lot
could never
of
get the casting distance.
They couldn't even get close enough to do it. But that's with those the tactics games. You can just cheat too much in those. You can just
yeah.
Do
but it. There's different ways to cheat, which makes it fun.
That's true. Okay.
That's the other... Hold on. Let me add one last thing in.
Sure. Let's make it long.
Out. Yeah. You know what? Let's make it long, Garrett. Don't sass me.
No, I'm not sassing you.
That is the real use of the dancer, is that it's incredibly easy to get JP by just having a character stand there and do the same
JP.
Move over and over again. That's the way to rack it up. Dancers, bards.
The real funness of any game. Getting experience and getting loot.
It will tell you how to farm, Brian, like a pro.
Oh, no. In Tactics, the easiest way to farm was... to get in a random battle and then surround, like, you know, an enemy and just unequip all your weapons and punch him and heal him over and over again. And before you know it, by the second battle, everyone will be a dragoon.
Oh, really?
It's true.
We would just punch each other in mine. I would attack my own people.
I would have a punching circle where the last person in the circle or the person in the center was a monk with chakra who would heal all five of them.
Oh, very nice. Wow. Mm-hmm.
I put some thought into that little circle jerk.
Sort of Let's move away from this and talk more about what our awesome people in the forum thread talked about. We have Pig King. He says, I like the class system in the Golden Sun games. By moving the Digin around between characters, you can change all of their classes because their classes depend on the type and number of Digin they have set to them. That kind of sounds like Final Fantasy VIII to me, and I have played Golden Sun. I don't remember enough of it to... remember any of it. Anne, have you played Golden Sun?
No, I haven't played Golden Sun.
You would love it.
Mm-hmm. I have played Shining Force 2, though.
Oh, that's a good time. But I'd say Golden Sun is very... They made it much later, but it just has that same feel as those Super Nintendo games did.
It does.
Super Nintendo RPGs.
I pulled up a whole class list for Golden Sun. There are a ton of classes in this game.
It really is. It's a deep game. It's a really good time. So if you haven't played it, I highly suggest it. But I don't know, Brian. You played Golden Sun, right?
Yes.
Do you agree with the Pig King here that it's a good time there with changing the classes up?
It is a good time because you're never restricted. You can always keep changing them, and there's just so many combinations. Some are a lot more useful than others, and some you can get like, you know, a fire class and then all of a sudden change it to a better fire class, or fire's not working out for this boss, I'm going to change him to a water class. But the one thing I like that the Golden Sun series did is that when in the second one, when you finally meet up with your party from the first game, if you combined your games,
spoiler
well, Ed, how many years has it been, come on, but
15.
Eris dies. But
in Golden Sun, that is a legitimate spoiler.
She shows up and just falls over dead.
Yeah, she did it in Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah, that's true. But in the second game, you can import your first game and get all the Dingin at the same time from both games, and you can create some like godlike classes that even at the last boss battle, it's still hard to beat the boss with them. So I can't even imagine beating the final boss without those extra, you know, bonus classes.
Oh, well, okay.
Do you think that it's a little overwhelming now versus how it used to be when, like, you know, for example, when you're playing, like, Shining Force or, you know, even some of the earlier Final Fantasy games where, you know, your character had a class and you had to stick to it. And now we have all these options where you can change the class and you can multi-microize or micromanage your different characters to be different classes.
We've briefly touched on it, but I'm gonna agree with the I like the old school way because I mean we talked about at the very beginning how D&D kind of set that standard for what are the core classes you need to be able to play, you know, your tank, your healer, your DPS, etc. But I don't know. I play lots of games now, and I think you know I don't find that having those hybrid classes and all those things that you have to micromanage adding that much value to it for me. For the most part, I feel like those hybrid classes just give you an excuse to find a way to exploit the system because the hybrid class falls outside of what should have been in the game, and those let you do things you shouldn't have been able to do in the first place, like tank and heal or DPS and tank or you know all kinds of different things like that. But I don't know. What do you guys think? What do you think, Brian?
That is actually a hard one to... Hey, Liz, what do you think of that?
I will tell you what I think.
I have to still think.
I think it's good to have your characters able to choose different classes within limits. Like, if you have a game of, I don't know, like 10 classes in it, I feel like each character should be able to be 3 of those classes so that you still have a reason to choose specific characters over other characters because not everybody can be every class. But it also gives you something. If you like one character, you have some options so that he's not totally garbage. That's how I think games are best done, when you have some options, but it isn't just homogenous where you end up with every character being the same, like the end game of Final Fantasy X.
Well, like Anne mentions, there's the micromanaging aspect. Some people like distributing tons of points between tons of classes and trying to get the best mix.
And some people
get totally overwhelmed. I'm somewhere in between where if there's a fair amount of like, okay, you can have this character be this and this and that'll work out. But then there's the times when there just seems to be so many throwaway characters. And for example, throwaway characters are numerous in Chrono Cross.
Yeah. Oh, for a throwaway game, it makes sense.
I always thought it was kind of weird. Like, you know, it's like you're playing with your archer, and all of a sudden your archer wakes up one day, and he's like, I don't want to be an archer anymore. I feel like switching over, and I'm going to be a mage now. Yeah.
It's just a midlife crisis. They're all 40 years old.
That's what Tactics has become in the newer series. I don't know if you two, or you three actually now, have played the newer Tactics series to get... To even more advanced classes, you used to have to like, you know, be 2 or 3 classes and then advance to another one. Now you have to be like an advanced class to get to the advanced class. So they go through like 4 jobs before they can be a summoner or some crazy mix now.
That's where micromanaging
gets to an extreme, because if you want to level this one archer to be like, you know, a summoner, you got to like pick all these terrible classes you don't even want to play as before you can get to the class you want.
That sucks. Like, I hated that in Tactics, just having to level characters, like leveling an archer just to get a dragoon or whatever it was. Like, I'm never going to use that archer. Don't make me do that. Just give me the dragoon.
In fact, I'm even remembering, I don't know if you guys even remember this old throwback, Ogre Battle. That was a game that punished you for... trying to mix and match your classes, because if you tried to have, I'm trying to remember now, like a soldier, and it didn't have a cleric in the party, just give up. Just throw the game out because you're going to die every single battle.
Yeah. They had this very specific way they wanted you to play that game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they played the game for you. You had to watch the battles half the time. But even then, you're watching the battles going, okay, I think I... No, they're all dead.
What happened? Everyone just died.
Yeah. All my pumpkin heads died.
It sounds like it's a perfect game for my father. Sit back, relax, watch it.
It's a brutal game. In fact, that game is so brutal. If you actually do pick the perfect group of characters, the game starts to punish you. Because if you start to do well and beat your enemies like in, you know, a couple turns, your alignment to your characters will start dropping. And you'll be considered evil for being so good at what you're doing. And then Jesus. if you get to the end of the game and if most of your characters are evil because they're doing well, you'll get the worst ending.
Because obviously if you're doing well in life, you're an evil bastard.
That, they punish you.
Well, that's kind of true.
I don't believe that.
Financially, anyway.
Not everyone who's doing well in life is necessarily doing well in life.
Think about it, Garrett. Every year that Reed and Fangamer do better, have you noticed Reed gets more evil?
You know what? He never used to play zombie games. I think
that's true. He used to play Bible games.
Kind of back on the micromanagement system for RPGs. I almost think that they've taken the RPG to the point. Like, I think they're almost getting bored with it. And micromanagement is one way that they can inject some kind of like other task or other job that you do that you have to try out to actually play the game as a reward system for actually playing it.
I agree, especially like with WoW, that and bag management.
Yeah.
Having spaces to hold all your crap.
You know, it's almost like, it's like, I would even say Pokemon is a really good example. I mean, how many different versions of Pokemon are out there?
Oh, Pokemon is nothing but a class game.
And it's the same game every single time. So it's like new ways that we can inject like new life into like these games, which are basically a very basic, simple idea, is to add like, you know, smaller things like micromanagement of classes, like more diversity in it to kind of get you off the fact that the story was hashed together last minute in the drunken rage somewhere on napkins.
Wait, there's a story to Pokemon?
Oh, how dare you, Brian?
Yeah, oh, Team Rocket and stuff. Sometimes... There's always some sort of alien god that eventually you befriend.
Blue. You're always trying to kill your rival.
Here's the plot to Pokemon. You leave your house, you collect some Pokemon, game over.
Where's the part where you find out Professor Oak is your father?
I'm waiting for that to happen.
I am too.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I was going to let us try and do final words on this, but I have a feeling it's not going to get any better than it already has. So let's all shut up, and we're going to let our buddy Kevin have some final words on this subject.
Dear Bahamut, we accept the fact that we had to sacrifice an entire summer to leveling up against Warmech so that we could get through the Temple of Fiends without dropping dead from a gas dragon's poisonous breath. But we think you're crazy for asking us to run class-specific fetch quests. You want us to believe that we can only equip certain weapons, carry standardized items, and cast the most convenient spells. But what we found out is that each one of us is a fighter, a thief, a mage, a ranger, and a dragoon. Does that fulfill your bizarre request for a rat's tail? Sincerely yours, the Light Warriors. You know, when I was young, classes made sense to me. Everything in its right place. A definition for every piece of equipment and every party member. Tough guys to the front lines, wizards in the back casting spells. The roles were rigidly defined. Then the next wave of games came in with even more classes to handle. That was alright. As long as they still existed in their set boxes, I could work with it. Even if they were getting more and more obscure, like lancers and blue mages. But another type of game was rising up, with the traditional character types thrown to the wayside, entirely unexplained on their status screens. Still, I persevered, trying to fit them into the systems I knew, improvising when necessary, like cutting the grooves into a Famicom game to fit it into a Super Nintendo. And then, seemingly out of nowhere, I was completely lost. Party dynamics gave way to first-person role-playing. Here are a variety of tools, I was told. Go ahead and make the character any way you want. They must have thought the newfound freedom would be liberating. I found it terrifying. Should I be creating an attack-heavy tank? Or an agile rogue? How much magic should I be using now that they've flung open the doors of the schools of wizardry to anyone who cares to test the arcane? It was a turnoff to my try-everything principles. I stayed away from what I thought was a grim future where only specialists would be welcome. But you know what? I went back, way back, and I discovered that all the old games had these open-class styles to them. Mario has options. He can attack by jumping on top of the Goomba, or he can leap to the platform above and run past it. And what else is Samus Aran but a free-form figure, ready to be molded into a heavy weapons expert or a svelte item avoider, based entirely on the whims of the player? Suddenly, customizability didn't seem so scary anymore. It was just my way of putting a little of myself into the world of the game. And now that our modern heroes are new-age jacks-of-all-trades, capable of both anything and everything, we've actually gone full circle, right back to those original days. And that, my friend, is true class. For Fangamer, I'm Kevin Williams.
All right, thanks, Kevin, for that. I really appreciate you bringing some sanity to what has just become the best podcast we've ever done. Let's move into a fan spotlight here and play some fun transition music. One thing we have this week is that we saw on the Kotaku blog was we'll put in the show notes here is Lemmings Graffiti out in Denmark here. Someone has actually done this really cool. They've kind of done like a screenshot of the Lemmings game on a highway overpass. So it looks like little lemmings are crossing between the signs, which to me is a really alt. Like we said with the tattoos, it's another really big way as a fan to show your love to publicly break laws and put screenshots of your game up on highway on the
now,
wall.
Didn't we determine earlier that we're not sure specifically if Denmark has laws?
Well, I'm going to say graffiti probably over across the board, not a cool thing. I'm going to make that assumption that even Denmark probably doesn't like graffiti. No. I don't think that's a far
unless you're smoking while you're doing it, then you're fine.
Then it's fine.
Mm-hmm. And drinking beer.
Oh, yeah.
With a prostitute.
But it's cool because it's an amalgamation of art. It's patronage towards, you know, loving that franchise. It's a really cool way to display it to the public. Know, what do you think, Anne? Graffiti of video games, good thing, bad thing?
Well, I think graffiti in a whole is a good thing as long as, you know, you're not doing it on something that really should not be graffitied. Like, for example, a couple of kids graffitied a bunch of streetcars in a street museum, like a streetcar museum. Okay, that's not cool, right? That's kind of bad. But, you know, if it's like, I always think that, like, as long as it's done with an artistic talent or that's something interesting to look at, I'm cool with it. But if you're just scribbling your name on the wall, forget it.
I have to agree, because a lot of the times around Seattle, you'll see some really amazing pieces of graffiti that it's art. But then you'll see off to the side, like, some kid who just, like, with, like, a magic marker or, you know, permanent marker kind of goes over the side of it and just doesn't look nearly as good. You know, but in terms of video games, I've never really seen video game graffiti anywhere. I mean, how about you guys? Have you seen anything out in the world that's like, I heard there's like a Space Invaders thing that was kind of.
Yeah, there's that Space Invaders graffiti that's like all over several points of like the world.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Like somebody keeps kind of propagating around.
And I haven't really seen anything here, but I've seen like some pretty cool, like, you know, Super Mario. Like graffiti and what else was it? Metroids.
You see Metroid graffiti? That's awesome.
And that's about the only cool stuff I've actually seen. I remember somebody posted up on the forums years ago. Someone did like Mr. Saturn and like a Starman. Like they spray painted it like somewhere, and half the people were like, "That's awesome," and the other half were like, "Oh my god, graffiti's bad."
Graffiti's that sounds like our forums.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I was just like, hey, that's kind of cool. But, you know, it's up to, art's always up to the eye of the beholder. So it's like some people are going to see it as art and some people are going to see it as a big mess. So.
I don't know, guys. Is graffiti on a wall an awesome show of your fan love? What do you think, Liz?
You know what? I feel like my opinion of graffiti is that as long as it's not a viral marketing gimmick, I don't really care. But that is the absolute worst when companies go out and they're like, I remember they did this with season one of Heroes when they were tagging like telephone poles and shit with that symbol. Sorry for the swear. With that symbol that was all throughout the show, like the single helix. And it's like, really? This is the best you can do? You're promoting your show by destroying people's property? Like, I don't know. The viral marketing graffiti is the lowest, cheesiest crap. I would rather have tags for the Latin Kings all over my house than a single piece of viral marketing.
I was like, that sounds on par for Heroes to me.
Yeah. Believe me.
All right. Well, hey, sure. Let's close up the show here. I want to thank Anne for coming in at the last moment here to be backup in case Brian dropped off again because a hurricane hit his house. I appreciate this, Anne. Thank you very much.
Well, Garrett passed out.
Yeah, well, I was off in the corner.
He's pretty. It's been a long podcast. He might have
dealing
you
with
too,
my
Liz.
Dealing with my mini animals.
I have my two martinis. I'm fine.
And
don't get antsy, Liz.
Oh, I definitely want to thank Brian as well for being on the show today. We've been trying to get you on here for a while, auditioning for our third chair. We appreciate it. If you want to see more of Brian, I think you just have to look at the Fangamer stuff and just realize he's behind a lot of what is happening there. So enjoy it. But we're going to leave the rest of the show here to Liz to close off the many ways people can enjoy our content and give us feedback and get in touch with us.
There are many ways that you can give us feedback or get in touch with us. The first way you can contact us is via Twitter at twitter.com/fangamer. I am the local Twitter person. My little symbol is @LB. So if you talk to someone on Twitter with those initials, that would be me, and I'm always happy to help. If you contact us via Facebook, that would be facebook.com, search for Fangamer, and that is run by the fantastic, wonderful Charlie, who I believe has a segment in this podcast.
Yes, he does.
Has a segment later in the podcast. If you would like to watch us on Office Cam, which is run by Steve, that is going to be Friday nights at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. And that is on ustream.tv/channel/fangamer, or you can just search for Fangamer. Looking for us on Flickr, just search for Reedman, because as usual, the boss decided to use his own name for the Flickr. YouTube, we are FangamerNet because we forgot we already took Fangamer and we lost the password. On Vimeo, search for Fangamer so you can see reruns of Office Cam. Store, this is what I get for reading the script. Store, if you would like to get apparel or other wares from us, you can go to Fangamer.net. If you'd like to read our blog, which is occasionally updated, you can go to Fangamer.com. We are always reachable on the Starman.net forums, which, despite what you may hear us say disparagingly during the podcast, is a bastion of adult discussion.
beautiful place.
Outside of the fanfic forum.
Yeah, right now the moderator forum is actually dedicated to Whistler tips, so it's a good forum.
You should be making breakfast.
If you have feedback, comments, or questions, and we do welcome those always, please feel free to email them to podcast@fangamer.com, and we would love to hear from you. If you have feedback about the audio candy section, email charlie@fangamer.com to hassle him directly.
I like fan back, though. That should be our new term.
I do like that, feedback, actually.
We want your fan back.
Give us a fan back.
Good times.
That's naughty. Like
some sort of hip social media term.
Baby's right, got guys. Fan back.
You liked it too. Don't pretend you didn't.
I'm gonna all fan right. back that hoe.
All right, folks, we're gonna fan play. Back that up. Joe's got a review this week. Charlie's got a good audio candy segment. We're gonna play those.
Feel free
for
to give
now.
Them both fan backs.
Yeah, they'll love it. It's so hard too. All right, guys. Thanks to Anne. Thanks to Brian. Everyone, let's sign off. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Hey everybody, this is Charlie and I've got a little audio candy for you. Why don't you give it a taste? This track is West Coast DK Island by Jig and John T. It's a remix of DK Island Swing from the Donkey Kong Country soundtrack. Jig and John T is an artist with a wide range of talents over multiple genres. He has a knack for jazzy rhythms and catchy tunes, and although he has several great solo tracks, he's obviously quite adept at handling multiple instruments. Personally, I'm just a sucker for jazz. Remember, it's not about the notes you hit, it's the ones you leave out. A long time ago, I was a subscriber to Nintendo Power, and one time they sent a free copy of the soundtrack of Donkey Kong Country to all the subscribers. I used to listen to that CD constantly. And this track really just reminds me of those days. You can find this track, and several other by Jig and John T, at ocremix.org. Again, this is Charlie with Audio Candy. If you have any other tracks that you'd like me to hear and possibly share on Audio Candy, feel free to drop me a line at charlie@fangamer.com.
Hello and welcome to the Fangamer Review. I'm your host, Joe Beavers, and tonight's review promises to be especially delicious. What is it that man truly dreams of? Is it riches? Fame? Wine? Women and song? If by some chance you answered pie, then you're in the right mood for our review today. These are the misadventures of PB Winterbottom. PB Winterbottom is the first game developed by the Odd Gentlemen, and was released back in February on Xbox Live. It stars the title character as a pie thief in the city of Bakersburg. With a love for pie that knows no end, Winterbottom finally meets his match in the form of a sentient pie. Now, you probably wish I was making this up. I assure you I'm not. Somebody else did it for me. Winterbottom chases the Chronoberry Pie through a portal where he ends up in the past. He realizes he can make up for lost opportunities and gets to snatching all the pies he ever missed out on. All in all, Winterbottom is a puzzle game with a somewhat interesting twist. Though it's a game dealing with time travel, it doesn't use the standard time travel mechanics. Instead, PB is able to create clones of himself that repeat whatever actions he wants them to until they're interrupted. Through manipulation of the clones, you solve various puzzles to collect the pies. Now, while admittedly I haven't quite finished the game yet, so I may be missing out on certain elements, but from what I've seen so far, the puzzles are, you know, somewhat basically simple, as they're largely Switch-based. It's not necessarily a flaw, because the puzzles themselves are quite clever and, you know, require excellent manipulation of the clones. It can take a bit of thought. Graphics-wise, it's reminiscent of the silent film era, and the style is mostly black and white and carries in some film grain. The the music equally so, which you've heard in the background playing now. Overall, PB Winterbottom is an engaging piece of work. It can be a little frustrating at times, but if you like puzzle games with charms, then you certainly can't go wrong here. Personally, from what I've played of it so far, I give the misadventures of PB Winterbottom a hearty thumbs up. Well, that's this edition of the Fangamer Review. If you have an indie or retro game you'd like me to cover, then either send an email to podcast@fangamer.com or leave me a message on the Fangamer forum. Well, I'm Joe Beavers, and for right now, I'm logging out.